Well, again, I want to thank the elders for the invitation to be with you this week. Been such an encouraging week for me, and I pray that the lessons have been helpful to you. It's been helpful to me. In preparing any lesson, you get a lot more out of it than I feel like you give or the audience receives. A lot of things I need to work on as a husband, as a father, and I hope that you feel the same way as a father or mother, husband or wife, or even as a child. In the home, there's a lot of areas where we can improve, and certainly the home is a very important institution given to us by God to help us to grow, to be what God wants us to be. We're living through a unique period, really, in human history, a period of intense flux and change and disruption that may not be repeated. New technologies are changing the way we communicate, the way we work and shop and socialize and play, almost everything. And this moment is not that different than the Enlightenment, when technology in the form of the printing press brought seismic shifts in awareness and knowledge and ultimately led to great and profound societal change. Whenever you have an enlightenment, you have new freedoms. And the concept of absolute freedom is fundamental to the ideology of the internet. But what is the consequence of absolute freedom? The scope of this enlightenment cannot be undervalued or underestimated. Between the years of 2000 and 2015, the number of people on the internet globally increased nearly sevenfold, from 6.5% to 43%. At the Davos summit in January of 2016, it was announced that 3.2 billion people in the world are now online. The number of cell phone users is forecasted to reach 4.77 billion in 2017. The number of hours spent on mobile phones is escalating rapidly. In a two-year span, it increased 65% in just 2 years. And the same study revealed that mobile phone users checked their phones 1,500 times in a week. And there are actually apps that will count how many times you check your phone during the week in case that's a problem for you. And the time that we spent on screens cannot be undervalued, or it's not a trivial matter. The scriptures tell us to redeem the time. And time spent on screens is time not spent doing other things like reading to a child or playing with a toddler or connecting with a teenager, communicating with your spouse. Because when you're online, you really are in a different world. You've checked out. You've gone somewhere else. You're just not present. And I think we all relate. We all kind of understand that from our own experience. And the time we spend on screens is just one of many issues that need to be discussed. I loved the panel discussion Sunday. Thought that was very valuable, one of the highlights of the week for me. If you were to do a panel discussion again, here's some questions I would love to hear discussed. At what age should you allow your child to be online? Is there a connection between online gaming and ADHD and boys? When should a child be allowed to have a phone? At what age should a child be allowed on social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, Snapchat? And under what conditions? What conversations do parents need to have with their children about social media and its use and abuse? And how do we monitor their social media? Do they have a right to privacy? And how do we communicate rules and restrictions for them? What is trolling? What is cyberbullying? What is sexting? And how do we protect our children from these abuses? And how do we prevent them from doing these same things to others? These are simply questions I have about children, though. That's not to say we don't all have the same issues. And there's so many other issues. I've focused on social media mostly in my questions. What about addictions? Addictions other than sexual kind, pornography-based addictions. What about online gaming? I'm not talking about gambling. I'm just talking about playing games online. Online shopping. I mean, there's just a multitude of issues to discuss. And we need to have balanced discussions about these. We have to be careful that we don't overreact to new technology. When the car was first invented, it was feared that if you went over 50 miles an hour, you would die, you know, like internally combust or something. Like the human body was not designed to drive that fast or go that fast. Of course, in the Enlightenment, when the printing press first started making copies of the Bible, there was a negative reaction from religious leaders, no less. There is wisdom in adopting new technology slowly and cautiously. But of course, isolation from technology is not the answer. It will not solve these problems. We can overprotect our children to the point that they're not prepared to live in this new world that we're living in. On the other extreme, we can't afford to have a laissez-faire attitude. The new cyber world we're living in is not a safe place, especially not safe for children. It offers unlimited opportunities to engage in almost anything you can imagine. It's an unregulated world. There's not a police. But there are very few laws restricting what can be produced online today. Did you know that? Our children need guardrails to keep them safe. In fact, we all do. It's not safe for adults either. And yet it's almost a necessary world to live in nowadays. I know that there are exceptions to that, maybe even in this audience. Although I would guess it's very few. And I didn't think this was the case not long ago. It was only in 1995 that I got my first email account, a Juno account, which I think I still have. It probably has millions of emails I haven't checked. And Pete McKee used to get really frustrated at me because I wouldn't check my emails more than once a week, and sometimes once every other week. We didn't get high-speed internet until we moved to Atlanta in 2001, and it was a while after we moved that we got it. I didn't have a cell phone when we moved to Atlanta, and I remember telling people at Embry Hills, I will never have a cell phone. I thought that was the most ridiculous thing. I thought, I'm not going to be leashed by that. Had a flip phone when we moved to Tuscaloosa just 3 years ago. And I thought I would never own a smartphone. It wasn't until recently that I got unlimited texting on my phone. And now I, like most everyone here, probably use my phone for practically everything. I read the news, I connect with my friends, I take photographs, I shop, I manage my calendar, pay my bills, I get directions. I feel lost when I leave the house without my phone. And I realize that we can survive without it, but it's getting harder and harder to function. As the real world becomes more and more integrated and dependent on the cyber world, these two worlds are merging together. Now, what Jesus said still applies. If your hand causes you to sin, cut it off. If your eye causes you to sin, pluck it out. That has not changed. But it's not as simple as, I don't know how many of you remember Randy Britt's invitation on Wednesday night when he came in and announced to everyone that Jenny had cut the cord. to their TV. She had threatened for a long time, and finally she had had enough and she just cut the cord. Hey, I can remember 20 years ago preaching those sermons on television. Oh, those were simple days. That was an easy sermon, right? Really easy solution. Easy to apply Matthew 5 there. It's not so easy anymore. And what I'm wanting to accomplish tonight, besides just covering the rather narrow topic we're going to be discussing, is to impress upon all of us the need to have the dialogue. We need to share our needs and our concerns and our fears and our temptations in this new cyber world that we're all living in. And I'm going to try to be nice, but those of us who are older, frankly, need to get our heads out of the sand and realize what's going on. On our watch, we're no longer talking about what's coming. We're talking about what is here, right now. This is no longer science fiction. This is a real world that millennials are living in moment by moment. When I send out an email blast or a text blast to the elders, I may get a response sometime in the evening from one of them, and then the others the next day. When I send out something to the college students, this is where kids are living every minute of the day. And who knows what the next generation past the millennials. We need to get our head out of the sand and realize this world is very real. It is very dangerous, and something we need to talk about. And Scripture is everything that we need. Scripture applies to this world just like it does to the real world in principle form. And so we're going to talk about how to maintain sexual purity in this digital age. And we're going to look at Genesis 39 very briefly, because we're going to spend most of our time in Proverbs 7 and then make some applications at the end. Let me just say a couple of things about Genesis 39, and we're not even going to read the story. But Joseph is tempted by Potiphar's wife. And I want you to think about, there are two ways that he uses to resist the temptation. And they're the two ways that we have to use in resisting every temptation. And that is isolation and insulation. How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? That's insulation. He had a strong relationship with God that was more important to him than anything, even his physical safety and well-being. I think he knew what the consequences of defying the master's wife might be. And yet he was still willing to make a stand and say, I won't do that. Not with you or anyone else. And so his conviction and his relationship with God insulated him against sin. And this is so important in resisting temptation. But insulation by itself is not enough. He also had to use isolation. At some point, as she came to him and grabbed him, he knew, this is it. I've got to run. I've got to get away from the temptation. And so we're going to talk about the importance of both insulation and isolation as we talk about protecting ourselves from sexual temptation in the cyber world. If you want to, you can turn now to Proverbs 7. We'll have all the scriptures on the screen here, but you might want to look at that for reference sake. We're going to look at 10 principles, and I know that sounds a lot like a lot, and it is a lot. I'll just go ahead and tell you the first three or four are going to take a lot longer than the last six, so you know, don't get too nervous. But I think we're going to find in these 10 principles really everything we need to battle this temptation, both in the real world and in the cyber world. Truly, the Word of God is timeless. And the first principle we're going to find here in the first several verses is that wisdom is your best defense. Wisdom is your best defense. He says in verse 1, my son, and that's the way he begins each chapter, you'll notice. And several times throughout the chapter, he'll begin by saying, my son, keep my words and treasure up my commandments with you. Keep my commandments and live. Keep my teaching as the apple of your eye. Bind them on your fingers. Write them on the tablet of your heart. And if you go through Proverbs chapter 1 through 9, you're going to find statements like this all over the place. Encouraging his son to listen to wisdom, to receive wisdom. He says, say to wisdom in verse 4, you are my sister, and call insight your intimate friend, to keep you from the forbidden woman, from the adulteress with her smooth words. This is the way the Proverbs begin in chapter 1 and verse 7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And he ends this section in chapter 9 and verse 10 by saying the same exact thing. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And he also says, along with that, in fact, the very next verse, 1 and verse 7 says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. 1 and verse 8 says, hear, my son, your father's instruction, and forsake not your mother's teaching. Listen to your father. Listen to your mother. He says in chapter 6 and verse 20, my son, keep your father's commandment and forsake not your mother's teaching. And over again, he says, you need to listen. You need to listen because we have learned from our own parents. Back in chapter 4 and verse 1, hear, O sons, a father's instruction, and be attentive that you may gain insight. For I give you good precepts. Do not forsake my teaching. When I was a son with my father, and who was Solomon's father? David. When I was a son with my father, tender, the only one in the sight of my mother, he taught me and said to me, let your heart hold fast my words, keep my commandments and live. Get wisdom, get insight, do not forget and do not turn away from the words of my mouth. Do not forsake her, and she will keep you. Love her and she will guard you. The beginning of wisdom is this. Get wisdom. And whatever you get insight. That was David. Do you think David knew the dangers of sexual morality in his own experience? Do you think David had been down some roads to teach him through hard experience these things? Solomon says, I'm just trying to pass it on to you. And I can almost see the eye roll through a lot of this. It's no different. The fact of the matter is, the reason why you see this repeated over and over and over again in the first 9 chapters where he is addressing his son is because he so knows his son isn't listening. Listen to your parents. Now, I realize that you think that your parents don't get it. And in many ways, they don't get this new digital cyber world. And you may think that there's just a lot of things about this that they're overreacting to. And let me just say up front that yes, I'm like everyone else. I'm like your mom. I'm like your dad. I'm probably overreacting to some things. But there's other things that I'm not overreacting to. Because though I don't know from experience everything there is to know about the cyber world, I know about the real world. And I've made some terrible mistakes, really, in both worlds. And so it's not just that we're fearful of new technology. And it's not necessarily that we don't trust you. It's everybody else. And we're doing this because we want to protect you and because the threats are real. And so, Wisdom from God. Wisdom as your parents have learned from God's Word and learned through their own experience will help you even in this world that we don't even understand everything about it. Wisdom is your best defense. The next thing we see is that predators go after the weak. He begins this scene. This is almost like a play. You can imagine on stage there's a spotlight coming down on this young man as he's walking across the stage and we see all this drama played out. He says, for at the window of my house I've looked through my lattice and I've seen among the simple and I've perceived among the youths a young man lacking sense. Cyberspace has some really dangerous neighborhoods in it. And you wouldn't take your 6-year-old to New York City and just let them roam free all on their own. Because there's some dangerous places in New York City for a 6-year-old. And yet we give them a phone. Or we give them a tablet. And just let them poke and play. And it looks so innocent. They're just sitting there in our living room. Ignorant of the fact that they are going into a different world. With some really dangerous things in them and some really dangerous people who will pose as friends. A journal, journal called Pediatrics, said 84% of U.S. children and teens have access to the internet. And there was a marketing study that showed that more than 50% who are 8 to 12 years old have a cell phone. And in 2015, Consumer Reports ran an article on this, which revealed that most American children get their first cell phones by the time they are 6. Now just think about that. These children are being catapulted into cyberspace before they're psychologically capable of handling the realities that are there. Before they can even make sense of what's going on. We don't even know what's going on, and we're adults. What does this mean in terms of their development? What are children doing when they're online? There were two very comprehensive studies done not too long ago. One in Europe between 2011 and 2014. And one in 2014 by four academic researchers in the field of education and psychology here in the United States. And the one in the United States had a very large sample, 442 children between the ages of 8 and 12, what is called middle childhood, were asked how they spent their time online. And these younger children, 8 to 10 years old, spend an average of 46 minutes per day on a computer, compared with the older ones, 11 to 12, who spend an hour and 46 minutes per day on the computer. And when they were asked what kinds of sites they visited, do you know what the number one and number two sites were? YouTube was by far the most popular, followed by Facebook. Facebook is supposed to be for 13 years old and up. Think about that. And yet 20 million minors use Facebook, according to Consumer Reports. 7.5 million of these are under 13 years of age. Are there any dangers on Facebook? And by the way, that Consumer Reports study was 2011, which is like light years ago in terms of technology. Facebook honestly doesn't know how many children are on because they're not supposed to be under 13. So there's no way that Facebook can adequately measure and see what's going on to 8- and 9-year-olds who are on Facebook. Who's policing all of this? I won't get into politics. Instagram is also highly popular for minors. And when they took these same children and asked them, these 8 to 12 year olds, what troubled them the most online, you know what the number one answer was? Pornography. And we're not talking about pictures. We're talking about pornography. Adult pornography. One psychologist said, this is the largest social experiment, unregulated social experiment of all time. What is the effect of little children watching pornography when they're 8, 9, 10 years old, before they even understand what's going on. And yes, there are predators. I'm not going to share this with you in this book because I know we do have children. But if you want to look it up, The Cyber Effect, a pioneering cyber psychologist explains how human behavior changes online. She is an advocate for children because there really is no police. There's no one in Washington or in Europe pounding the door saying, we need to do something about this. And it may be one of the largest public crises we've ever faced. We don't know what the effect is going to be, what these children are going to grow up with the problems that they have. I can tell you of a few occasions when I have had real serious conversations with young people who are struggling mightily, not only with heterosexuality, but homosexuality. And you know where it began? It began online. One thing after another, until there's an addiction that they cannot control. It's scary. It is downright frightening. It says in verse 8, passing along the street, this young man who lacks sense, who doesn't know where he's going, and I don't think he has pictured an 8-year-old, by the way. Passing along the street near her corner, taking the road to her house in the twilight, in the evening, at the time of night and darkness. We're naturally curious beings. We're that way by design. God made us that way. In fact, all animals are curious. They want to explore their world. They want to learn and know things. And there is actually a pleasure to be found in seeking and finding. You've had that experience before when you're online even. And you're searching, you're Googling something, and you may even spend hours and not realize you've spent hours searching for this thing. You might even spend days looking for something, and when you find it, there's an exhilaration in that. Do you realize that that curiosity gene is a million times more in a child? A child coming to you with 20 questions. Why is this? Why is that? Why? You realize that's God's way of giving them this learning gene? I can still see my brother sitting down with his encyclopedias open, reading them for hours. Imagine what Daniel would have done with Google. Children are naturally curious. And here they have at their fingertips a world of answers. You can Google literally anything, including someone said, how many Pop-Tarts you can fit in the stadium or something like that. I mean, it's just like any question you can think of. Add to this strong desire for seeking the sexual curiosity that all children have. And then the sexual drive that they have when they become adolescents. And you add to that curiosity the privacy of being able to find all of these answers in your home, in your bedroom, wherever you want. It's right there. I remember when we first moved to Atlanta, there was an adult bookstore called The Love Shack that opened up. And everyone was up in arms. I mean, people were going to the city courthouse and letting their voice be heard because of The Love Shack. We're raising our children with this in our community. I'm sure there were a lot of kids that were curious about what was in the Love Shack, but they were afraid to go there, or they just couldn't get there. Their curiosity could not be satisfied. Where are the parents concerned about the Love Shack online? There's a lot of problems associated with this form of communication that's inherent to it. The next thing he says is, behold, the woman meets him dressed as a prostitute and wily of heart. Sexual immorality is driven by what the eye sees. Porn sites online receive more visitors each month than Netflix, Amazon, and Twitter combined. It represents 30% of the total internet industry. The average boy watches 50 porn videos a week, which in part explains why pornography is the fastest growing industry in America, increasing $15 billion annually. And our children are eating it up. I've had the privilege of going to a camp, a leadership camp, where young boys, 12 to 18 roughly, will sit and study the Bible literally for 7-8 hours a day. I mean, these are kids who come from good homes. Homes that are very safe and secure in many ways. Homes where their parents are aware and doing everything they can to protect their children from pornography. And yet I will tell you, I have sat there in the cabin at night when everyone is talking about things that they're struggling with, and as soon as one boy confesses, pretty soon you've got a whole cabin full of boys that are just bawling their eyes out, confessing even addiction to pornography. And they've never shared it with anybody. And these are the good kids coming from good homes. We need to take this seriously. She is loud and wayward. Her feet do not stay at home. Now in the street, now in the market, in every corner she lies in wait. Sexual morality can be a desire for attention. Why post all the pictures, the selfies? It's a new phenomenon. Oftentimes it is a desire for attention. And young people are all, to some degree, narcissistic. We tend to, at this formative age, from 12 to 18, where we're trying to figure out who we are, and we're looking for affirmation. And it can be intoxicating to get all the likes. And when you get the comments about how beautiful you are, how nice you look, and all of those things, it can be a very rewarding experience. And it's not all bad. But this desire for attention can become overwhelming. And it can cause us to do some things that we wouldn't normally do. And that's usually where sexting begins. The boyfriend isn't satisfied with the pictures he sees on Facebook. He wants to see a little bit more. And many young, trusting girls have sent pictures of things that no one should see. But it's all a desire that is deep-seated, and it's not an inherently sinful desire, but it becomes that way because it's being expressed in the wrong way and at the wrong time. And the internet just provides another avenue for this. She seizes him and kisses him, and with a bold face, she speaks to him. There's a desire for adventure that's a very powerful drive. You know, when we were kids, it was spin the bottle, right? It's where you're pushing the boundaries, you're pushing the limits. It's taking what you know is kind of dangerous and not exactly right and having fun with it. Well, the consequences are much greater when this becomes public viewing for all to see. This has become a real problem with marriages. I read recently some crazy blog, 7 Reasons Flirting is Good for Your Marriage, which is just garbage. Flirting outside of marriage, by the way. That's just wrong. But probably the main argument that this woman was making was, you know, you need a little adventure. It can get a little boring at home. And we need some adventure. We need something to spark the romance in the marriage. How that does that, I don't know. But this is where sexual immorality begins. It begins in the heart, where we're trying to fulfill these needs. And one of the needs that we have is emotional needs. She says, I had to offer sacrifices, and today I've paid my vows. And that's a warning to us that this can happen in church. Don't let down your guard just because this is a Christian. So now I have come out to meet you, to seek you eagerly, and I have found you. And when you have someone who isn't getting attention at home, when you have a young girl or a young boy who's very insecure and is looking for attention, or you have a husband or wife who feels like they're neglected at home, it just makes you vulnerable. And of course, in the old days, this was done at the office, where you know the secretary is giving a sympathetic ear to her boss, and one thing leads to another, and then it becomes physical, and it didn't necessarily start that way. Well, now online, there's just all new avenues for that to be expressed. I can't tell you how many people I know who have committed adultery because of relationships that started online or were rekindled online. You have a class reunion and you have the email list and you can reach out to your old ex and you see how they're doing, and one thing leads to another. And there's not even any physical contact during this time. You could be many states away and yet an emotional affair begins online. That's a reality now that we have to realize and deal with. And we need to think about boundaries and things we should never do online. Sexual morality is as much an issue of the heart as it is physical. I've spread my couch with covering, colored my linens from Egyptian linen. I've perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let us take our fill of love to the morning. Let us delight ourselves with love. The lie of sexual morality is that this is love, when it's not. She doesn't love him. She's loving herself. She's seeking what she needs or what she perceives she needs. She's already married. She should love her husband. And she doesn't really love this young man. My husband is not at home. He has gone on a long journey. He has took a bag of money with him. At full moon, he will come home. With much seductive speech, she persuades him. With her smooth talk, she compels him. There's only one verse in this chapter that talks about dress. It's the power of the tongue that is highlighted, not dress. And that's not to take away from the dangers of online pornography. But let's not be ignorant of all the other dangers as well. Emotional affairs that begin online, all just by what seems like harmless talk. And I'll say something to the young people right now. One of the phenomenons that's going on in this day and age is people are waiting longer and longer to get married. When used to, you would get married, you know, very early, perhaps even before you went to college in some cases. Now it can be many years after college before you get married. And what happens during that time is you develop close, intimate friendships, opposite sex friendships. And what's happening among millennials is many times those relationships are not changing once they get married. And it has to change. You can't be the same friends you were before after you're married. You have a new best friend now. Not just one that you happen to live with. No, the two become one flesh. And so that friendship can still be a friendship, but it has to be different. It has to change. You cannot share intimate secrets with someone of the opposite sex. Those things must change. All at once, verse 22, he follows her as an ox goes to the slaughter, as a stag is caught fast, till an arrow pierces its liver, as a bird rushes into a snare. He does not know that it will cost him his life. Sexual morality will cost you everything. And I've seen that. You've seen that. We all know stories of people who lost literally everything because of some very poor decisions that they made. And so he ends, "Oh, now, and now, O sons, listen to me." and be attentive to the words of my mouth. Let not your heart turn aside to her ways. Do not stray into her paths, for many a victim she has laid low, and all her slain are a mighty throng. Her house is the way to Sheol, going down to the chambers of death. So what can we learn from this? I want to suggest just a few applications. First of all, we need to have some kind of boundaries on the internet. And I realize there's ways to get around it, but let's put something up. If you don't have anything up right now, don't let this week go by. Do your research. Get online. Go to the parenting websites. Find out what's the best thing for you. We use Covenant Eyes. It's a filter, but it also provides accountability. I have an accountability partner that all of my web searches goes to. And if there's anything that's flagged by Covenant Eyes as something that could be pornographic or something else like that, it goes immediately to my accountability partner. Use all of these things. Protect yourself and protect your children. Talk regularly about risks that are online. Ask your children. They asked in this survey, I wonder how many of those parents had asked their children, have you ever seen anything disturbing online? Ask your children. You may be surprised what they reveal to you. Set restrictions around online access. We talked about this in the panel discussion. Our limit during the week, Monday through Friday, school days, is 1 hour. That's enough. They need to get all their homework and stuff done first, but an hour is enough. On the weekend, we are a little more lax on things. But we need to have some kind of restrictions. We just can't be online or gaming or whatever it is constantly 24 hours a day. Supervise children when they're online. If they do have tablets and phones and things like that, it's just a rule, and it's not a popular rule in my home, I'll tell you that, but we just have a rule. You can't do that in your bedroom, ever. And if we catch you doing it, there's going to be major consequences to that. They need to be in common areas. And it's not because we don't trust you, it's because we want to protect you. That's what this is all about. Find an accountability partner. If you are struggling or have struggled in the past with pornography, confess your sins to one another. And that's not talking about coming forward at the end of a service like this. This is not something that the congregation needs to know. But it's something that somebody who is a righteous man or a righteous woman who will help you and be very non-judgmental toward you and will take you by the hand, will pray with you, will be your accountability partner, that's what you need to do. You need help. You cannot do this on your own. So stop fooling yourself into thinking that you can. Find someone. There's a lot of very good, compassionate, non-judgmental people here at Cahaba Heights who will do that very thing for you. Find an accountability partner. And then this is the most important. This is the insulation. Build the relationships you have with your spouse. Make your home affair-proof by investing in each other, spending time with each other. One of the most important things that me and Adrian do, three or four times a week, is we just take a walk. We walk for about 2 miles. And we started it because we were trying to lose weight, but I would never stop this because that is the time where I'm not on my phone, she's not on her phone, we're not distracted by the kids, we can talk. And that is such a valuable time for us. Spend time, quality time with each other, undistracted time. Spend time with your children. I don't know how long ago it was. It was back when we were still in Atlanta, so at least 3 years ago. I realized that all these plans that I had to study the Bible with my children, I was always talking about it, preaching, but I wasn't consistently doing it. All this time that I needed to spend, I wasn't spending because I wasn't scheduling it. So I just put them on my planner with everybody else. Bible study with one child on this morning, Bible study with another child on this morning. And we spend time studying the Bible, but maybe just 15 minutes. A lot of that time is just talk. And we talk about sports. We talk about Auburn football. We talk about what's going on in the band. We talk about lots of things. But every now and then, something really significant comes up in our conversations. And so we need to build a relationship where our children feel safe in confiding in us and talking to us. It's one of the things Pete McKee told me over and over again. He said, David, when you have children, make sure you're not just a disciplinarian. Make sure you build a relationship with them. And I hope that I've done that. But most importantly, we need to build a relationship with God. If, this is going to be painful for me, I don't know about you. If we were to compare the amount of time that we spent praying and studying and worshiping God to how much time we spend online, what would that look like? That's a scary thought. I'm not sure I'd want a stopwatch timing me on things like that, but maybe I need to get that app that records how many times I go on my phone and how long I spend on it. Maybe I need to look face to face in the mirror and think about what matters most to me. And so I hope that tonight you've gotten something that's helpful, something that can be translated into your home, into your life. But hopefully this is just the beginning of a much longer, much more meaningful conversation where you sit down with your wife, you sit down with your husband, you sit down with your kids, and you talk about these things. And you make it safe. You say, look, let's just put it all out there on the table. Let's talk about what's going on. And not just be one-sided. Let's ask our kids, am I too distracted by the tablet and by the phone? Am I not giving you the attention that you need? How do I need to improve? Because we need to be thinking about rules as well. It's not just imposing rules on them. But we need to have the conversation. And we need to take inventory of our life and decide what matters most. This world is not going away, and we're only going to get more and more connected. And so I hope and pray that this has been helpful to you. If there's someone here tonight who's not a child of God, we don't want to end the series this week without again offering you the opportunity to come to the Lord. It may be that you've done some terrible things online. God will forgive you. He will forgive you of whatever you've done, however long you've done it. That's the God that we serve. He is a merciful God. He is a God of second chances. And so whatever the baggage you came in here tonight with, God will take that. He'll throw it as far as the east is from the west. He will plunge it into the sea, into the very depths, and it'll be forgotten in His mind. And so if you need to get that burden off your back, if you want to be forgiven of your sins, why not confessing your faith in Jesus Christ? You can be baptized, forgiven of all of that. And if there's something the men or women here can do to help you, and you just need to grab someone after services and talk with them, don't leave tonight without doing that. Do so, you'll forget about this. Do something tonight to make the change. As together we stand and sing.